Dr. Blumenfeld, it's a pleasure to have you come, and we're ready for you.
Well, thank you, Kurt, so much for that kind introduction. And it's always a delight to be in Portland because I have so many friends here that I've made over the years and having spoken here. And it's nice when people come up to you and say, I heard you speak in 1988. You know, and here I am, I'm still around. But you know, it's so wonderful to see young Christians proclaim their love of God. I mean, this was so spectacular, the singing here. And of course, we also have to be so very grateful that now we have a president who actually prays to Jesus Christ. You really have to be moved if you watched him the other night when he said how much he prays, because he knows the responsibility that he has to protect us according to the Constitution. And I was very moved by those statements that he made, that he prays, he's concerned, and he's a Christian. So he knows what we're up against, and he knows that it's only with God's help that we're going to survive all of this, that we're going to survive this war on terror, this terrorism that's been launched against us. And you think in terms of what kind of a religion tells people to commit suicide, to kill 3,000 people, to hijack planes. It's a very strange religion. It can't be a religion of love, can it? See, the contrast between what Christianity is and what Christianity has created, the United States of America, it has created the freest, the richest, the most benevolent society in history. And look what comes out of the Middle East. What kind of a religion is that? That produces nothing but death, destruction, hatred? You know, one has to think, one has to realize how lucky we are, how fortunate we are to have had predecessors, who have had ancestors who believed in the Lord and came to these shores and built this magnificent country. Well, you know, the homeschool movement is the most important educational, social, cultural, and religious revolution that has impacted America in the last two decades. It provides thrilling proof that freedom is still alive and kicking in America, and the movement continues to grow. I don't think that all of those youngsters who went upstairs with Jay Grimstead are going to let this country be taken over by a dictator or by anyone who wants to destroy our basic values. It's not going to happen here with so many young Christians all over the nation, not only here in Portland. I mean, this is a phenomenon that's going on all over the nation. I remember the first homeschool convention we had in Massachusetts about 13 years ago. I don't know, Kurt didn't mention that I came from the East Coast, you know, the frigid East Coast. And 13 years ago, and that convention was held in a church basement with about 300 attendees. Last spring, that convention was held in the Worcester Convention Center with over 3,000 attendees, hundreds of exhibitors, and tons of literature filling shopping bags for attendees. Nowadays, homeschool organizations print up elaborate booklets and brochures giving details of their upcoming conventions. They have become much more professional in everything they do, an indication of growth and development. However, from my point of view, the importance of homeschooling is not so much in its burgeoning organizations and conventions, but in its impact on the education of children. There is no question that parents have proven that they can provide a healthier, saner education for their children than the dysfunctional government schools. And most important, homeschooling has revived discussion and debate over which philosophy of education is the most valid. In the history of our country, we've seen three philosophies of education come to dominate our view of schooling. The first was the orthodox Calvinist philosophy of the Puritan founding fathers. They had left England with its hierarchical Anglican state church, seeking the freedom to create a fundamental Bible commonwealth in the American wilderness. They believed that the purpose of life was the glorification of God, and therefore education emphasized biblical literacy so that a lasting Christian civilization could be built in the New World. In their New England Primer, they taught children the alphabet by relating the letters to biblical teachings. Thus, in teaching the letter A, they wrote, quote, "In Adam's fall, we sinned all. B, heaven to find the Bible mind. C, Christ crucified for sinners died," etc. And of course, the children were drilled in phonics, which made them very good readers. There was also a need for a learned clergy, and so Harvard College was founded in 1636 as a seminary for Calvinist ministers who would preach God's word from their pulpits to a God-fearing congregation. Their highly erudite sermons lasted hours on Sundays. Of course, they had no Sunday football or golf games, you know. That was all they could do, is to sit in church and listen to these wonderful, wonderful sermons. And you have to read them. They're all out of print. I mean, you got to go to an antiquarian bookstore to find some of these things. And you read them, and they're mind-boggling with the knowledge, the learning that these men had of the Bible, you see. All of the Protestant sects throughout the colonies placed high value on education. Colleges were established in Virginia in 1693, Connecticut 1701, New Jersey 1746 and 1766, New York 1754, Pennsylvania 1755, Rhode Island 1764, and New Hampshire 1770. But that orthodox philosophy of education didn't last long. It was undermined by the rise and development of a liberal Christianity coming out of Harvard College. By the end of the 18th century, Harvard had rejected the divinity of Christ and become Unitarian in religious theology. Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, whose father, an Orthodox minister, had come to Boston to preach, she wrote, quote, "Calvinism or orthodoxy was the despised and persecuted form of faith. It was the dethroned royal family wandering like a permitted mendicant in the city where it once had held court, and Unitarianism reigned in its stead. All the literary men of Massachusetts were Unitarian. All the trustees and professors of Harvard College were Unitarians. All the elite of wealth and fashion crowded Unitarian churches. The judges on the bench were Unitarian, giving decisions by which the peculiar features of church organization, so carefully ordained by the Pilgrim Fathers, had been nullified. Old foundations established by the Pilgrim Fathers for the perpetuation and teaching of their own views in theology were seized upon and appropriated to the support of opposing views. A fund given for preaching an annual lecture on the Trinity was employed for preaching an annual attack upon it, and the Hollis Professorship of Divinity at Cambridge was employed for the furnishing of a class of ministers whose sole distinctive idea was declared warfare with the ideas and intentions of the donor, unquote. For Unitarians, the purpose of education was not the glorification of God, but the glorification of man, who was seen to be as divine as Jesus Christ. In other words, Jesus was divine to the extent that all men were divine. And in order to divorce education from Calvinist orthodoxy, the Unitarians launched the government school movement as a means of getting orthodox religion out of education. The result was the growth of the non-sectarian public school system financed by the taxpayer. The model they used for their government education system came out of Prussia. Horace Mann, the Unitarian Secretary of Education in Massachusetts, had visited Prussia in 1843 and returned to America with a glowing account of the Prussian system, with its compulsory attendance, truant officers, and government-trained teachers. And what was the philosophy behind the Prussian system? The purpose of education was to serve the state. By the end of the Civil War in 1865, the sectarian secular public schools had become the dominant form of education for American children, and the battle of the against the Bible began in earnest, a battle that would last 100 years. After World War I, the public schools were taken over by the progressives. Now, who were the progressives? They were the Protestant academic elite that no longer believed in the religion of their fathers. They now put their faith in science, evolution, and psychology. Science explained the workings of the material world. Evolution explained the source of living matter, you know, the primordial ooze. And psychology now provided scientists with the means to study human nature and the ability to control human behavior. The progressives were also socialists because they had to deal with the problem of evil. They rejected the Bible's explanation of sin having entered the human race through the disobedience of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. These secular-minded professors decided that evil was caused by ignorance, poverty, and social injustice. And what caused social injustice? Why, it was this horrible system of capitalism with its worship of private property, competition, distinctions between rich and poor, and its dog-eat-dog philosophy of survival. A socialist education would eliminate ignorance, which would eliminate poverty, which would eliminate social injustice. In other words, socialism would wipe out evil and bring us utopia. The progressives then embarked on a massive program to reform the public school curriculum. They decided that in order to bring about a socialist society, they would have to dumb down the American people. The easiest way to do this was to produce a low level of literacy. And this was done by getting rid of the phonics method of teaching reading and putting in its place a whole word method that would teach children to read English as if it were Chinese. They were so successful that in 1955, Dr. Rudolf Flesch was compelled to write Why Johnny Can't Read. And in that book, he wrote, quote, "The teaching of reading all over the United States in all the schools and in all the textbooks is totally wrong and flies in the face of all logic and common sense," unquote. That was 1955. It's still going on today. They haven't changed anything. But then the unspoken philosophy of education, as demonstrated by the new methods of teaching, was to use the public schools as the means of bringing about an atheist or humanist socialist society in America. In 1933, the Humanist Manifesto was published. It was written by young Unitarian ministers. Its aim was to propose humanism as the nation's new religion. It said, quote, Religious humanism considers the complete realization of human personality to be the end of man's life and seeks its development and fulfillment in the here and now. There's no such thing as eternal life after death. Religious humanism maintains that all associations and institutions exist for the fulfillment of human life. The intelligent evaluation, transformation, control, and direction of such associations and institutions with a view to the enhancement of human life is the purpose and program of humanism. Certain religious institutions, their ritualistic forms, ecclesiastical methods, and communal activities must be reconstituted as rapidly as experience allows in order to function effectively in the modern world. A socialist and cooperative economic order must be established to the end that the equitable distribution of the means of life be possible, unquote. And so in that historic manifesto, humanists not only declared war on Christianity, but on capitalism as well. It was signed by 34 authors and educators, including John Dewey. Their aim was to present Americans with an alternative to their religious faiths by appealing to their secular temperaments and hedonistic propensities. Reason, rationality, science were to replace the supernatural. In 1973, Humanist Manifesto II was published. It provides an exposition of everything that is now being taught in America's public schools, in the public classrooms: strident anti-Christianity, abortion, moral relativism, situational ethics, sexual liberation, and world government. To be a believer people like us, this is a blueprint for a satanic society. It was signed by 283 professors and writers, including Andrei Sakharov, the Soviet physicist, B.F. Skinner, the behavioral psychologist, Francis Crick, the discoverer of DNA, Alan F. Guttmacher of Planned Parenthood, Betty Friedan, founder of Now, and many, many others, indicating the depth of unbelief to be found in the highly educated elite. It really is remarkable that there should be such a depth of unbelief among them. And what is their philosophy of education? It was well expressed by a humanist writer by the name of John Dunphy, who wrote in The Humanist of January 1983, quote, "I am convinced that the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public school classroom by teachers who correctly perceive their role as the proselytizers of a new faith, a religion of humanity that recognizes and respects the spark of what theologians call divinity in every human being," unquote. Of course, that is pure, unadulterated Unitarianism as preached by the Harvard elite back in the early 19th century. Mr. Dunphy goes on, quote, "These teachers must embody the same selfless dedication as the most rabid fundamentalist preachers, for they will be ministers of another sort, utilizing a classroom instead of a pulpit to convey humanist values in whatever subject they teach, regardless of the educational level, preschool, daycare, or large state university. The classroom must and will become an arena of conflict between the old and the new. The rotting corpse of Christianity, together with all its adjacent evils and misery, and the new faith of humanism, resplendent in its promise of a world in which the never-realized Christian ideal of love thy neighbor will finally be achieved," unquote. The rotting corpse of Christianity. That's their view of all of us. Whatever happened to the separation of church and state? In fact, humanists are the most vociferous proponents of that separation when it comes to biblical religion. But here, a humanist is proudly encouraging teachers to become the promulgators of this new religion of humanism, and the separators of school and religion are silent. Isn't it interesting what they choose to be for and against? And so the latest philosophy of education in our public schools is the humanist imperative to brainwash American children to become humanists. And the entire curriculum now conforms to that end. Thus, Christian parents who hand over their children to these humanist proselytizers ought not to complain when their children lose their faith and become atheists, nihilists, Satanists, anarchists, socialists, and communists. And that's why so many of you have taken your children out of the public schools. The present philosophy governing public education is now fully satanic. For when you remove God from the classroom, Satan enters. And that is why we have 6 million children drugged on Ritalin and the school murders and massacres that have shocked the nation. And now that your children are out of danger, we can seriously ask homeschoolers to tell us their philosophy of education. In my book, Homeschooling, A Parent's Guide to Teaching Children, I have a chapter on devising your own philosophy of education. In it, I wrote that most homeschoolers accept the philosophy of education implicit in the program they have bought for their children, whether it be a Becker, Bob Jones, Mary Pride, Christian Light, and others. All of these programs emphasize the development of basic academic skills. That is what virtually all parents want, including those who put their children in the public schools. But by homeschooling, you can actually get what you want. You have the freedom to pick and choose. You have the freedom to get a good phonics program for teaching your child to read in the correct phonetic manner. If parents were asked, what do they hope to accomplish with education, many of them would say, I want my child to have a strong belief in God, a belief that will put and keep him or her on the moral path throughout life. I want my child to become independent, to be able to earn his or her way throughout life, through life, develop a satisfying career or profession, find a good mate, create a loving family, achieve happiness, become a good citizen. Obviously, a strong moral education is the foundation of future happiness. Children basically learn morality not only by reading the Bible, but observing their parents. When children see parents living in obedience to God, in prayer at church, they are more inclined to obey their parents. One of the problems we have today are immoral parents incapable of raising moral children. Moral parents belong to a good church and see to it that their children worship with them. Learning to pray, learning to be in communion with God is an important part of education. But homeschoolers have the glorious freedom to be innovative. For example, Mary Foley, a homeschooling mother on Cape Cod, Massachusetts, was required by the local superintendent to submit for approval her education plan for her 9-year-old son, Christian. She wrote, quote, "The priorities of our curriculum are daydreaming, natural and social sciences, self-discipline, respect of self and others, and making mistakes. I encourage an acceptance of failure so that he will be comfortable taking risks. By the time he is 10, he will be competent in life if I have done my job. And if he chooses, he can spend his life in school. But for now, he is not ready to make that decision, and I must do what I believe is best. My curriculum was best expressed by Blake, quote, to see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour, unquote. Not bad for a homeschooling mom. A lot better than anything John Dewey ever wrote. My own view is that the purpose of education is to transfer to the younger generation the knowledge, wisdom, skills, and moral and spiritual values of the previous generation. And that transfer can be made lovingly, patiently, and enthusiastically. I also believe that the purpose of education is to enable an individual to control his or her life and not become the victim of prevailing forces. We live at a time when survival requires an astute intelligence that enables us not only to read books and magazines, but also the handwriting on the wall. There is more misinformation and disinformation being diffused throughout the world today than ever before. And a well-educated person should be able to dig out the truth under a mountain of lies. One might even say that the ultimate aim of education should be not only to enable an individual to discern truth, but to make the individual want to know the truth and to dig for it when necessary. That's so important. You have to want to know the truth. There's so many in this people who don't want to know the truth. They would rather go around with blinders. But if you've brought up a youngster who wants to know the truth, you've really done your job. So where do we go from here? We have learned so much in the last 20 years. One of the great lessons learned is that homeschooling has improved and enhanced family life, creating a new sense of family interaction that results in greater family harmony. We have also learned that parents learn more than their children when they take up the challenge of educating their kids at home. They learn to read better when they teach phonics to their kids. They learn the history they never were taught in school. They learn the importance of combining spiritual values with academics. They learn how to spell. The revival of interest in history, great literature, and the classics is providing homeschoolers with an essential foundation in culture. Children taught to read at home with phonics have become the most literate young adults in our society. They are also becoming the most computer literate. Christian homeschoolers are also responsible for the revival of biblical religion in America, which rejects evolution, premarital sex, abortion, drugs, and pornography, the social ingredients of our humanist culture. And it is our task to advance biblical Christianity as the foundational religion of America, the religion on which our nation's principles of government were established. So where do we go from here? We must become avid, kindly missionaries for the homeschool way of life, reaching out to those families in the community who would benefit most from it. We must inform our neighbors of how much we are saving them in taxes, you know, for taking the responsibility for educating our children at home. If you assume that each child that you teach at home saves the taxpayers, you know, from $3,000 to $5,000 to $7,000, and you multiply that by several hundred homeschoolers, that's real money, you know. And taxpayers should realize what a service you are doing to them and how much money you are actually saving them. We must show these parents who send their children to the public schools of the terrible social and academic risks involved. And of course, the children are at risk in four ways. They're at risk academically because of the lunatic methods used in the public schools to teach reading. You know, you've got whole language, you've got invented spelling or creative spelling, you've got the new math, and then you have the new math. And all kinds of crazy, nutty things. And of course, So many of these children become learning disabled in 6 months. All it takes is 6 months to turn a perfectly healthy child into a learning disabled child because of the methods used in the schools. And these methods are being used every day right here in Portland, right here in the suburbs of this great state. So they're at risk academically. Then they're at risk spiritually because here's Mr. Dunphy telling the teachers to wean these kids away from Christianity and turn them into humanists. That's what he's telling them. And the teachers are agreeing with him because they all follow the Humanist Manifesto. And then the kids are at risk, morally, because what are they teaching? Sex education, drug education, everything that gets kids into trouble. You know, sex education leads to premarital sex, experimentation in sex. And premarital sex is responsible for more social problems in this country than any other activity. It's much worse than smoking. Premarital sex. You don't hear anything, the schools, you know, are doing anything about premarital sex, you know. Because the humanists believe in sexual freedom. If it feels good, do it. That's their philosophy of life. And of course, there's also the physical risk. You know, school buses do crash. Put your child on a school bus, there are problems. There are shootings in the schools. There are assaults in the schools. There are massacres in the schools. And incidentally, the young Satanists in the schools always go after who? The Christians. Like the one school where this satanic kid shot up this prayer group. Christian prayer group. So you put a Christian child in a satanic school, and that child is in danger. Academically, morally, and physically. So, where do we go from here? We must urge Americans to use the freedoms that we still have. You cannot have a free society without educational freedom. And so we must be vigilant and battle those like the National Education Association who would deprive us of our freedom to educate our children as we see fit. Also, we must continue to support those institutions and enterprises that have arisen as a result of the homeschool revolution. One such institution is Patrick Henry College, founded by Michael Farris of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. The potential for influencing Congress through the efforts of the students at Patrick Henry College is really awesome. Indeed, Joel Belts was quoted in the Homeschool Researcher asking, quote, "What special interest group in American society right now may be the most effective at lobbying the U.S. Congress? If you guessed that it's a band of educators, you'd be right. But if you picked the National Education Association, you might be wrong these days. For according to Representative William Goodling, a 22-year veteran of Congress and chairman now of the influential Education and Labor Committee, the homeschoolers of our country have developed more expertise than any other group in getting the attention of our nation's lawmakers." And he goes on to say, "I would suggest that Representative Goodling's high praise of homeschoolers for their ability to win points in Congress may represent no more than the tip of the iceberg, that it's only the precursor of other ways in which homeschoolers may more and more shape society far out of proportion to their numbers and acceptability to the rest of society." And of course, not only do homeschoolers now have lobbyists in Congress, but also in practically every state legislature in the United States, including, I assume you have people going up to Salem to let your legislators know that you exist. And they better realize that pretty soon they're going to be more of you than teachers in the public schools, more of you than members of the Oregon Teachers Association. You see. And politicians love to count noses. You know that. They live and breathe on elections. And when they see that you can turn an election around, because homeschoolers have been active in local elections, and they've gotten some of their people elected, not always, because you have the local PTA, the local education association, which is very powerful in local communities. Sometimes it's tough sledding, but we are growing, and we're growing in that kind of political power. We can't ignore politics anymore because our freedom depends on political influence. And that's the only reason why the NEA and the educators are so powerful, is because they threaten any legislator who does not agree with them. And so they're able to ride herd on every single state legislature in this country. So we have to do something about that. It's very important for homeschooling parents to get involved politically. Well, what Mr. Belts said was written in 1997. How much truer it is today in the new millennium. If any movement has the potential of saving America from its moral decline and secular sins, it is homeschooling. Today, our nation faces enormous dangers, and many homeschoolers have embarked on military careers. I have no doubt that many of them will become the military leaders of tomorrow. I've been surprised at the number of homeschooled youngsters who want to go into the military. Sort of odd. You would think they'd all be pacifists. But no. They want to defend their country. They love this country, and they want to defend it, and they're willing to do it. In sum, even though homeschoolers represent a small percentage of the children being educated in America, their quality surely makes up for the lack of quantity. The movement grows one family at a time. Thus, the example you set in your community helps the growth and acceptance of the movement. Spread the word and encourage other families to join us. In closing, may the Lord be with you in your hearts and minds in the difficult and challenging days and years ahead. And may he give us the strength and diligence to rebuild America on the foundation of his loving word. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Would you want me to take questions from the floor?
Do
we have that time?
We have a little time. Do you have some questions you might want
to? Yeah, if anybody has any questions, I'll be glad to entertain them. You know. What time is it? Oh, it's just a little. Yes. Say that again. Yes. Well, it's all around us. Abortion, you have unwed motherhood, unwanted pregnancies, abortion, poverty, the young ladies who have these kids, and what happens to the so-called fathers. You know, they just disappear into the night. This is particularly, this has been an awful phenomena among the black population of this country, where they have such a high number of children out of wedlock that it's terrible devastation is being done to that community. And so we have no lack of evidence that premarital sex has caused all of these problems, and then we have to pick up, you know, the government's got to give them benefits and take care of them, and these kids then are put into public schools where they're destroyed, their brains are turned into macaroni, and it's a sorry state of things. Yes, sir, did you want to follow up on? Well, yes, you can. You can quantify it on the number of abortions that young unmarried girls have. That is available. If you want me to get the statistic, I'm sure that even Planned Parenthood would supply us with that statistic. Then we know about children born out of wedlock. That's a statistic that's available. We know about poverty among these youngsters, these young girls. Girls of 15 having a child out of wedlock, you know. Now they have high schools will take care of the kids. High schools have little playpens for the kids of 14-year-old and 15-year-old mothers. There's no love. There's no happiness. There's no family. Can you imagine what that's doing to a large section of our population? The premarital sex usually takes place in the back of a car, in a school toilet. Wonderful places for romance, you know. Where's love? They don't know anything about love, but they've been sold a bill of goods about sex. And of course, you've all heard about schools giving out condoms, you know. They're not going to put a ban. As a matter of fact, there's been tremendous opposition to abstinence among the schools and the educators. They're saying, oh, well, abstinence doesn't give you the protection you need in case. So you've got to give these kids all the sex education that's available because you can't trust the kids. But you know, there are a lot of Christian kids who believe in abstinence. They have, as a matter of fact, there's an abstinence society or an abstinence movement. An abstinence movement, and of course, when they want to preach abstinence in the schools, they're told, no, you can't do this because it's religion. Has to do with religion. But the humanists can do it. That's a religion. They claim it's a religion. Dunphy calls it a religion. And yet they can get away with their, sexual liberation. It's a horrible problem. And the only way that this country is going to recover from it is by widespread Christian revival. That's why it's so encouraging to see young Christians standing up for what they believe. And they are an example that a lot of young people will follow if they knew that it existed. Because none of these girls, look at the fashions, young girls, what they're wearing today. Look at the magazines, 17 magazine. Have you looked at 17 magazine to see what they're selling to the young teenage girls today? Go to the mall. See it all at the malls. These lobotomized kids walking around the malls. You know. I mean, the clothes they wear, do they look as if they have minds? Would anyone with intelligence dress that way? Would anyone who has any respect for their intellect, the way some of the boys dress, you know, with their pants practically falling down, you know? And the girls, every girl is told to become a temptress, that the only purpose in life is to tempt boys to rape them. That's what they're telling the girls in these magazines. I mean, if you read between the lines, and sometimes they're pretty open about it. They're not all that secretive, but they've been pushing this so-called new morality for decades, and we see the devastation all around us. But let's face it, lobotomized kids are not going to save America, you see. You're going to save America because your kids have the intelligence and the knowledge to do it. Those kids are going to just be on the sidelines. Maybe some of them will be in the army and they'll straighten out. But your kids with their brains intact are going to be the leaders of this country tomorrow because we need all the brains that we can get. We can't afford to have so many dumb, stupid kids around. Do any of you ever watch the Jay Leno show where he tours the streets of Los Angeles and he interviews these young people and he asks them, who's buried in Grant's tomb? They don't know. Or who wrote Handel's Messiah? They don't know. I mean, the stupidity is beyond belief. The ignorance and stupidity is beyond belief. And they've all had a public school education. They've all been through 12 years of hell, you see. And that's the result. Yes, sir. Is that the situation here in Well, I would advise no homeschooling family to have anything to do with the public school system. You need to make a clean break with the humanists and all of those people who are destroying children. You don't want to be around people like that. You know, we've known for years now since, you know, Rudolf Flesch wrote his book in 1955, and here it is, 2003, and they're still teaching kids in the way that he said was the wrong way. And I know that for a fact because I do a lot of traveling around the country and I see what's going on in the schools. I've been fighting this whole language thing. As a matter of fact, when they put whole language in the schools of California, I had a newsletter back then and I said, this will guarantee widespread illiteracy among the children in California. I wasn't making a prediction out of nothing. I was predicting on the basis of knowledge. And so they put whole language into the schools of California, and California now has the highest number of illiterates who've attended school. These are not kids who are out of school. These are, and so many of them are on Ritalin, they have to be drugged. Because what happens is this. When a child enters a classroom, say at the age of 6 years old, first grade, most of the kids feel very intelligent. Why? Because they've taught themselves to speak their own language. You know, anyone who has taught himself to speak his own language is a very intelligent youngster. So they've developed a vocabulary in the thousands of words. So they enter the first grade classroom, and they're taught to read by this whole language method, which does not teach phonics, which teaches them to look at each word like a Chinese symbol. And of course, you can't learn to read that way. So they become terribly frustrated and terribly angry. And when you're frustrated and angry and you're stuck in a classroom that you can't get out of, what happens? You act up. You become a nuisance. You want to get out of there. But what do the schools do? They tell the parents, well, your child has a reading disability. Your child has dyslexia. Your child has attention deficit disorder. Your child has attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And your child needs to be drugged. That's the only solution. Ritalin, Zoloft, Adderall. 6 million children are drugged every day in order to attend school, in order to keep them quiet. And we now know that what these drugs do is that they actually reduce the size of the brain. They have an effect on the brain. And long range, I mean, a youngster who has been on... We also know of youngsters who have died because they were on Ritalin, because Ritalin constricts the blood flow. And one youngster died after having been on Ritalin for many years, and he died of a heart attack. Now, since when do 15-year-olds have heart attacks? You know? So parents are, apparently, there are an awful lot of parents in this country who are ignorant, and don't know what is going on and are easily manipulated by the educators. And that's why, to my mind, the homeschool movement is such a blessing to this country, that there are enough parents aware of what was going on so that they would protect their children. Well, I think I've spoken myself. I want to thank you again for your very kind attention. You've been a great audience, and it's been a delight to be with you. And, of course, tomorrow I have two workshops, one on reading and one on the teaching of history. And then I will give a talk at the end of the conference. Thank you very much.